back in on Canuck Central Hour number two. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Mobile Kintec studio at Rogers Arena. This hour of Canuck Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Let's bring in our next guest, Don Taylor, Donnie and Dolly. Donnie, I thought the Pettersson trade negotiations, rumors, discussions, I thought those were well behind us after he signed the contract, but I guessed wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, things just don't seem to be comfortable right now for him. But this is the one, you know, section of the contract, the first year where there is no trade clause. I always have trouble with that. There's no trade clause. So if there was ever a thought that maybe he was going to move on, this might be it for the Canucks. It's Vancouver. It's bound to happen, you know. We're, you know, third away through a season. They're disappointing. So they've been disappointing so far. So yeah, let's trade Elias Pettersson. I get it.
I mean, that's the way it goes oftentimes. But I'd say, you know, even though yes, they can trade him, there's not a no trade clause, and it can't kick until next year because of the way the CBA works. It's still technically an RFA year for Pettersson this year, despite signing the long term contract. But you know, I know there was an understanding when they signed him that they wouldn't trade him, even though he doesn't have the no trade. And to trade him to Buffalo, of all places, like, would that be the biggest screw you from management to any Canuck player ever, where they sign him to a long-term deal and then say, we're not going to trade you, but then trade him, but to, like, the worst market in the league?
Yeah, it's a good market. I don't know if it's a good franchise.
Yes.
You actually go to, like, I don't know if you've been to a game at Buffalo, but it's pretty impressive. It can be anyway. And then the thing is with Buffalo is that they draw so many fans from Southern Ontario that it's a much better hockey market than, like, it's almost like the market is just so much better than the franchise. And I know they've been to a couple of Stanley Cups. It's it can be in some ways similar to Vancouver, but to trade Pettersson there, yeah. But probably get a lot of ice time, given that. No, there'd be no question about that. But I don't know. I always wonder what would have happened to that franchise. I get off the subject a bit here, as I often do, but. You know, they were so close to, you know, landing Connor McDavid in 2015. What would have happened there? Would he have wanted to stay there? Eichel didn't, but for Pettersson to go there, man, that would be really interesting.
It's not been a good few years for the Buffalo Sabres. Maybe a little bit more than that. Good decade plus.
It's almost two decades
for the Buffalo Sabres. But it is interesting. I heard this quite a bit in my mentions, and you know, over time, you kind of look back and I kind of get it. But this idea that Vancouver turns on its star players after they get paid, and we've seen it to a certain extent with the Sedins. Now they overcame it, obviously, for a time with Roberto Luongo, and the my contract sucks. Happened to Bertuzzi and Naslin to a certain extent. You know, does Vancouver turn on its star players in the way that some people have been texting at me today?
Yeah, or in the case of Pavel Bure, the star player turns on the market. I just think it's human nature is in effect here. And you know, if I go through every player who signed a big deal in Vancouver, obviously there's going to be guys that your expectation levels go up for the fan base, and if the production goes down, then there's clearly a problem. And Vancouver, throughout its history, has always liked players who are somewhat who come across as underdogs. And when you get paid well, and there's a sniff of, you know, maybe you're not trying your hardest or whatever the case may be, then the market does tend to turn on people. Mark Messier is another example, though he came from another organization, you know, signed a big deal here, and just Danny's production wasn't there as well. But it's a market that's hard on players that are making big bucks, unless the production is such that you just can't really complain.
Yeah.
And you know, like the Sedins, like it was hard for anybody to get upset with them. But you know, like relatively speaking, they were making a lot of money, but the production was so fabulous and they were so unique that. It's funny with the Sedins. I almost think, guys, I don't know what you think, but that, to go against what you're saying, Dan, I apologize for that, but it's almost like they took more criticism early on when they weren't making as much money, and the production just wasn't there. And you know, there was more thought of what were they doing, what was Burke doing drafting them, than later on when it was clear that they were clearly superstars.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the reason all this stuff is kind of coming out is it's clear that there is a level of displeasure by the head coach. Even president, Jim Rutherford, mentioned that obviously the coach has been dealt a tough hand this year, but, you know, that they can't continue being the way they are on home ice if they want to be a playoff team, and that there are a lot of issues they have to fix. And the coach has come out and said they have too many passengers on too many evenings. And despite the fact they have 35 points to 29 games, it's not, you know, to me, you know, not to make this about the media, but to me, it's not, the conversation is not about is the media or the fans being too tough on the team. It's the fact that the Canucks themselves seem very displeased with what's going on, despite having 35 points in 29 games.
Yeah, you know, that's such a good point. I think when you tell people, when you actually tell people, hey, the record is this, and you mentioned the 35 points, it's actually not bad. It's not, if I'm not mistaken, not that far behind their pace from last year, which turned out to be a very successful year. The problem is that so much of the success has been on the road, and you're not keeping the people who buck up big time in this market, you're not keeping them happy by entertaining them at Rogers Arena at home. And it just adds to the weirdness of this season. So I just think that plays a big part in it. And when you're talking about not pleasing, not entertaining, pissing off the people who are paying a lot of money, that's bad for business. And I think that's where a lot of the dissatisfaction comes. Plus the strangeness of the bad starts. And you know, like it's just really, really weird. And it's very clear that nobody, it seems, could put their finger on it, except to say that maybe, and this is a hope, I think, for a lot of people, that you can explain it to some extent with the injuries and the absences and things like that, and the flu, you know, which is going through the team now, reportedly. So that's the only thing that maybe people can hang on to. But when you're not winning at home and people are dissatisfied with that, and, you know, you have these big expectations, you were expected to be better than last year, not close to last year, but better than you were last year, then you can understand why people are pretty upset in this market.
You think Tocchet is, I don't know if running out of answers is the right word, but he seemed kind of exasperated after the loss to Boston. Well, he's gotten to the point where he's not the mad parent, he's the disappointed parent, which is always worse, right? Yeah. And he was just like, it almost feels as though he's missing on how he's going to get the best out of these guys, because it's happened so often this year.
Well, here's what I think he's exasperated about. And we've talked a lot, the three of us, about moving feet. And he talked about Max Sasse and how he's moving his feet. And as a result, he talked about that after practice yesterday. How he's moving his feet, and it looks like he's, I don't know what the latest is, but it looks like he's going to get promoted as a result. That's minor hockey stuff. And we talked about that in regards to Elias Pettersson earlier. Also, after Sunday's practice, he brought up playing, you know, like getting the puck to the weak side where nobody is, where there's more space, where the puck isn't. Getting the puck over there where people are open. Again, that is real basic hockey. And I think that's what's really exasperating for him, is that he feels, and it's evident when you watch, that they're not doing the little things that all the good teams at much lower levels know all about. And I think that's what's really really upsetting him. You mentioned the word exasperating. Absolutely. And that's tough when guys aren't doing things that players and teams are doing at much lower levels, even in minor hockey, such basic stuff. And yeah, emphasizing the forecheck, just those little things that every player, especially at that level, should know. And I think that's where he's getting really, really upset. Again, I use the word exasperated, and he's so honest with the media, and he lets that out. And when you watch the games, I can understand where he's coming from. I just don't know why it was there last year and it's not this year. Can you say it's injuries? Well, you know, guys can be hurting in terms of their health. whatever, however banged up they are. Even the people that aren't injured players always banged up to some extent. But what we're talking about there, moving your feet, it's physical, but it's also mental. Hey, I got to move my feet. You know, playing, you know, making sure the puck gets to the weak side, that's mental. And it's really tough that they're doing things like that. And it's really obviously starting to get to Rick Tocchet. I think right now, I just wonder how smart he thinks his team is at this point, especially when you compare it to last year when it looked like they knew exactly what they were doing.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's refreshing to me is that it's a front office and a team that's not satisfied with, you know, being okay and just being a playoff team and having a decent record. Like, it really seems like the process and how they do things really matters more than just getting results.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and you know, like, just executing well. And if you get 2 points, I mean, they, don't get me wrong, they need a point. Mm-hmm. They need 2 points. Every time out, that's your goal. 2 points is your goal. If you get one, I guess that's fine too. But a coach will accept it if a team's just unlucky. If the process is there, and the coach will know that if you continue playing like that, things will turn out just fine. That in the long run, you'll get the results you deserve when you're playing smart hockey, when you're playing basic hockey with hard work the way you should be. And it's just not, it just doesn't seem to be there right now on home ice of all places, which is just strange.
Yeah. They were so good at home last year. What did they get? 71% of the total points available to them.
And, well, just nine losses, nine regulation losses last year. And they're almost there this time around.
And like I said, off the top of the show, like 5-1 was a flattering score to the Canucks. Like, it could have been worse.
Yeah, and I know there was a lot of play. The flow, I don't know if you guys saw Tyler Myers' interview yesterday. I watched it on the on Canucks.com, on Twitter, actually, not on Canucks.com, but he was coughing throughout it. So, I mean, there's a flu, but a lot of teams have to deal with flu and illness throughout the year. So you gotta, you know, you're on the ice. You gotta do what you have to do out there. It was a weird day in Vancouver. But guys, it was the Boston Bruins Saturday night, hockey night in Canada. Your boss is on after hours afterwards. You probably don't give a crap about that. But it just, there's every reason to come out flying. And whether it was the flu or not, it was just really, 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 really disappointing for a lot of people who went through a real tough day. Not just the players. I'm talking about the fans. Mm-hmm. Went through a really tough day in Vancouver with the storms and, man, there was tragedy, and it was just a really weird, strange day, and that just added to it on Saturday night. And for Brad Marchand, of all people, to score the winning, the opening goal, yeah. I mean, come on. That didn't happen, did it?
You're almost egging on Marchand with the booze when he touches the puck, right?
He loves it. He loves it.
It's so pro wrestling of him. He's like the macho man out there when he's on the ice.
I wish there was more of that in hockey.
It's great.
Doughty's like that, and Marchand, and you know what? They're not going to be around that much longer, so we need some new players to come around and be like that.
That's a really good point. I just love it. I just love that stuff. And the problem is that, and, you know, it's raw emotion for fans. They're not really thinking. He does love it. That gets him going. He loves it. It's not going to hurt him one bit. In fact, it's going to help him. But it sure makes for good entertainment. Look, Brad Marchand, I would want him on my team. I know he's done some dirty things in the past, but that really adds to the entertainment values. Nothing wrong with having villains in pro sports. We don't see enough of them these days. Everybody gets along too well. I kind of enjoy it. I just don't understand why the Canucks didn't rise up when that was happening.
Well, you can cheer for them in the Four Nations there, Donnie. So
that's true. That's going to be strange.
On Brock Besser, how difficult a negotiation do you think this is?
Well, you know, and we've had a couple of guests on our show say this sort of thing is the 40 goals the one-off? Hmm. Is he a 40 goal scorer, or is he somebody who's around 25, maybe 30? Is the 40 goal, is that a one-off? And if so, then you have to negotiate appropriately. You looked at the start of this year, it looked like he was headed towards 40, and maybe that still happens. I kind of doubted it at this point, but you just have to ask yourself, is that going to happen again? If you sign him for 8 years, what is his foot speed going to be like in 5, 6 years? 7 years. You know, if you do sign it for eight, which you can, as the team he's re-signing with, that's what you have to ask. And is trading Brock Besser a possibility if it means you can help your defensive depth? Guys, I just think that I don't want to see, like, he's my kid's favorite player. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see him go. But don't you just get the feeling that something's up here, that somebody from that core has got to go, and maybe the guy who's about to become a UFA is the number one candidate, you know, or is it one of the two players, Pedersen and Miller, that apparently they're reportedly not getting along? I'm not sure, but I think anything's possible, even dealing away the longest tenured and extremely popular Brock Besser.
Yeah, and I think with Besser, it's going to come down to, I think, Vancouver being willing to give the eighth year, because if they do, they can probably get a deal done with him and pay him more than other teams can, and with a lower AAV, because they can't go 8 years. But if they are worried about going the term, that's where it can get really sticky with Brock Besser. And, you know, as far as, you know, other things this front office might do, I do think a lot of the discussion around Pedersen has, you know, at least from our discussion, distracts from maybe what businesses the Canucks are actually trying to get done. And I think the stuff they're trying to get done right now is to find another defenseman and another forward. And the question is, do you think Rutherford is able to pull a deal off here with Patrick Alvin ahead of the roster freeze, which is coming up on Friday?
It's just the assets, guys. You gave up a lot last year. You gave up draft picks for Zadorov. Well, that was a great deal, you know, later round draft picks in November than what you gave up in prospects and you know, first rounder to get Lindholm. And I think people take that deal given the nice little drive they went on last year. You know, that it was a strong playoff drive last year. You got to within, you know, one game of knocking off a team that came within one win of winning a Stanley Cup. So I think people take that, but you know, they've dealt away draft picks. The regime previous dealt away draft picks. You've got, you know, Vilander. You've got Lakaramaki. A few others, maybe. Like, what do you have? Well, what do you have? Like, and what do you value more? Do you value what's happening now? Because I think at the beginning of the season, you'd say, absolutely, we're a now team. But what at this point do you value? It's just so interesting right now. But I just think if indeed there is a problem with the dynamic in the dressing room and it's affecting your on-ice play, something's got to be done with that core. I honestly believe it. Or, you know, do you strike while the iron is hot with somebody like a Kevin Lank? I know that sounds ridiculous, but if you can get something for him while he's hot, and you know, somebody needs a goaltender, maybe a Carolina, or I don't know. It just seems like a team that needs something big done, and they've got a president and a GM, but especially the president, who's got that history of making big moves and making them early before the trade deadline. It just seems like something's imminent.
Donnie, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much for this today.
Anytime, guys. Always fun.
There he is. The legend himself, it's Don Taylor, joins us every single Monday here on Canuck Central. You also hear him on the crossovers on Wednesday with Canucks Talk. Donnie and Dolly, 10 to noon on Czech TV Monday through Friday. So,
Besser?
Brock Besser. It's obvious when Jim Rutherford is as blunt as he was on After Hours, saying, it's like all contract negotiations. The player wants one thing and the team wants another.
Yeah.
We'll watch this closely. Paraphrasing a little bit, I had the full quote up on X after it came out. Or you can go watch After Hours with Jim Rutherford on sportsnet.ca. It felt like, similar to how the Canucks managed the Hronek negotiation, to a certain extent, even the Bo Horvat negotiation, where, you know, this isn't a player that they are trying to sign no matter what. This is a player that they're very keen on signing for the right number, but there is a limit to where they are possibly going to go with Brock Besser.
Yeah, and I think I thought Rutherford, overall, the way I took his comments were positive, because he was being cagey. And I don't think he's being cagey if he didn't want to sign the player.
Right.
You know, and I think that's part of it. I think there is a genuine interest in getting something done with Brock. To your point, it can't be the number he may be able to get elsewhere, or numbers that somebody else has gotten. Like, for instance, when you look at his production, mm-hmm. and a player his age from the same draft year, Travis Konecny, just got 8 years at $8.75 million per season.
Yeah.
I don't think the Canucks have any interest in paying Brock that. And I know there's a lot of conversation. People will text in and be like, they think Konechny's a better player. I'm not here to debate which player is better, right? But when you put up the same numbers or even better numbers, the argument is going to be, why not get the same contract this guy got?
Yeah.
Right? That's just how the arguments go. There's no way I think he signs in Vancouver for that. I don't think the Canucks pay him that. So I think he's going to have to take less to be in Vancouver. The question is, how much less is he willing to take? Because I think if the Canucks put an offer in front of him, if they go 8 years, and it's, say, seven and a half to 7.75, that gets you to $62 million.
Yeah.
Or 63 even. It's kind of close to what he could get, 9 by 7 even. He's close to that number, right?
That's $63 million. Let's say he could get 9. The Guentzel contract that Tampa Bay gave Guentzel in the summer of last year. Guentzel has a better profile, obviously won a cup, yeah. Those kinds of things. But, you know, cap's going to be significantly more in the summer. So that changes the negotiation, changes the price of things. Still, like 9 by 7 in the open market, if he puts up another 30-plus goal season playing top-line minutes, doesn't seem like a stretch.
Yeah, I would still, if I had to guess, Reach, I'd say that his market in free agency is more along the lines of 8.5 times 7.
Okay.
That would be my guess. And obviously, I mean, we'll see if he gets there. And maybe he does get 9 with the cap going. Like, you make a good argument about the cap going up and the scarcity of players, and that does drive the price up. And there is a world where that can happen.
It takes one.
You're right. But that $500,000 is a difference of $3.5 to $4 million.
Yeah.
You know, of total money, for instance, right? So I think the Canucks would love to get Besser signed for around 7.
Yeah.
Is he willing to do that? And are the Canucks, because I know the Canucks with Hronek, it was a tough negotiation. It took a long time, right? And for a long time, I don't think the Canucks wanted to get to $7 million.
Yeah. Well, even Alvin on our show was like, we've put an offer on the table that we think is very fair.
Yes.
And there was no contract signed the next day.
No, we don't know exactly what that contract was, but reason to believe it was slightly under.
Yeah.
$7 million, and ultimately they got him done at 7.25. The thing is, are you willing to go an extra $250K to $500K above where you're comfortable to get the deal done with the player? They've shown yes. If they want the player, they will. But if the gulf is $1 million or $2 million, that's not going to happen, right?
Well, the thing is, on a contending team, you have to, if you're the player and you truly want to stay, like, you've got to play ball a little bit.
Yeah, right?
Like the Flyers can give Travis Konechny that money, they don't have a lot of other commitments.
Well, no, and
so it doesn't matter to them as much as it does to the Canucks right now, who have many other commitments, have a core they're trying to win with right now and trying to continue adding to that player.
And all the other all the contracts that Canucks signed, like even Pettersson, and I know he's struggling now and people are saying 11.6, he actually took less than what he could have. For, like, if he was really trying to drive a hard bargain, he could have got $12 million plus, right?
Yeah.
So they signed him for, they said, hey, we want you, but you have to play ball to some degree. So he did.
Miller pays for back-to-back 100-point seasons.
Miller also took a little bit less,
yep.
Right? Even Filip Hronek, when you think of what he could have gotten, and this is something that you heard Alan Walsh talk about in the comparables for defensemen, righty defensemen, it could have been $8 million plus. Like, look at the comparables. He could have pushed for that, but he ultimately took a little bit less to be in Vancouver. Besser's going to have to do the same. And I would guess Besser will do the same because there's a real desire from him to stay in Vancouver.
Yeah. Less isn't like $1 million a year less. Less is tends to be far less than what you might think or what you might hope is a team-friendly contract.
Anytime a player leaves for $1 million or less, that means that it became personal.
Yeah. The contracts that ended up being incredibly team-friendly are the ones like Nathan McKinnon where you sign off of, a soft season.
50-point season. Yeah,
and then you're like, well, now I'm a 120-point guy winning the Art Ross Trophy or a Hart Trophy, and it's like, how are you only making $6.3 million? This doesn't make sense. Those are the best and most team-friendly, but it doesn't always end up that way. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, coming up. What's the Buffalo side of this conversation? Lance Lisowski will join us next on Canucks Central. In on Canuck Central here in the Mobile Kintech studio. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah at Rogers Arena. Canucks hosting the Colorado Avalanche tonight. This hour of Canuck Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Let's bring in our next guest, Lance Lisowski, covering the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Thanks for this, Lance. How is it around Sabres land. I'm sure there's not too many Sabres fans pretty happy right now. It's kind of much of the same story for the last decade plus, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if it's exactly the same story, but no. I mean, obviously, with it's been 13 years. It's going to be 14th. They miss again here. The expectation, especially with Lindy Ruff returning, was that firing another coach would be the cure-all, but of course, we all know that's not how it works in this league. And although Lindy Ruff has fixed some issues in the Sabres game, others have cropped up, and here we are again with more rumors of a potential firing and another general manager desperately trying to improve his roster while navigating the wonderful world of no movement clauses. And yeah, a lot of players around the league don't want to play in Buffalo right now.
Well, and you know, we got some reporting today from that Terry Pegula, the team's owner, flew in and met with the team and told them that nobody's getting traded. He believes in the group. What do you make of all that? And is that a kiss of death or something legitimate that they want to be patient and kind of ride this one out?
Well, think about this. As an owner, Terry Pegula, the narrative, and it's been earned, to be quite honest, around his ownership of the Sabres is that he's disconnected, that he's an absentee landlord of sorts. So if you're an owner and, you know, who's got a relationship with a coach, I mean, he's known Lindy Ruff for a while now, and if you're considering a general manager change, you're not going to fire your general manager and not at least speak to your players beforehand, right? So I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but as the owner of the team, Terry Pegula has to make sure that, okay, well, if he does make a change in the general manager seat, those players have to hear from him that he believes in them. He needs to hear from him. They need to hear from him that he believes in the coach. So it's making an appearance. This trip was already planned. So this isn't something that's the product of the loss in Toronto or the loss in DC, but, and with the NFL playoffs coming up here and all the responsibilities tied into the Bills' new stadium, Terry Pegula doesn't have a whole lot of time. So this is an opportunity for him to go meet with the coaching staff, hear from them, hear their insights, hear from Kevin Adams, hear from other people in hockey ops. And, you know, it reminds me back in 2021, guys. They lost 18 games in a row. And about 10 games into that, Kevin Adams held a team meeting. Well, the GM can't do that right now because there's a lot of talk about his job status, so it's got to be the owner. And, you know, it's an opportunity by, you know, or at least an attempt by Terry Pegula to quiet the noise. And I'm sure that his coach is also telling him that's an important step here. Quiet the noise, help these guys refocus, because if they lose tomorrow night, Montreal, they're at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. And we'll see how the owner reacts if that happens.
So what's the issue, Lance? I mean, you look at the roster, like talent isn't necessarily the issue with this team. They got boatloads of talent on the roster. Why can't they get it together?
There are a few problems here. Their D core isn't good enough. You've got talent at the top, but their depth options have been really bad this season. They haven't adjusted well to a new coaching staff. Lindy Ruff can't trust half of his D core at the moment. That's a problem. They got to trade for another defenseman. And you look at the, you know, some of the young guys in this group, Jack Quinn, J.J. Paterka, and Zach Benson in particular, they were rushed to the NHL. And when you rush guys to the NHL, development is not linear. We know that, especially, it doesn't matter if you're doing it in junior hockey, American League, or the National Hockey League. And if you're doing it in the NHL, that learning curve is extremely steep. You throw in another new coach, new system, new expectations, new responsibilities, there's been a drop-off with the core of this. I'm not going to call it the core because that's excluding Tage Thompson, but Paterka, Quinn, Benson, they're not goal scorers right now. They're not producing. And Kevin Adams counted on them to produce. You know, he bought out Jeff Skinner, which was justified based on Skinner's play, but they didn't bring in another top six forward because the thought from Kevin Adams was, okay, Lindy Ruff coming in is going to lead to improvement and more production from those players that I mentioned, along with Dylan Cousins, Alex Tuch, Tage Thompson. It hasn't happened. Their power play is struggling. This team is getting ahead early in games. You look at their first period goals, they're around fifth in the league in first period goals. They've scored first in 19 out of their 31 games right now. That's a really good rate. But they're not winning enough those games because they're not able to protect leads. So you got a team that is thin on the back end, is losing pit poise in key moments, and is buckling under pressure. And, yeah, I mean, you look at the roster, yeah, they got talent, but a lot of these guys, they haven't learned how to win. You know, like, they've been brought up and they haven't been surrounded by guys who know how to win. You know, the GM's brought in some guys who do know how, but it doesn't happen overnight. And it started to snowball them here, where, you know, your power play's not scoring and you're losing a lot of close games, 6-1 goal losses during this skid. You know, it's not like they're getting blown out 5-1 like they were in that 18-game skid. So it is really hard to wrap your head around it right now.
Well, you mentioned Dylan Cousins, and he's a guy that obviously people out here know very well from the UConn, has played, you know, hockey in BC. People here are big fans of his game, but it's been a couple of tough years for him. He's still very young, only 23 years old. And I know the franchise has traded players before and it's come back to haunt them. Where do you think they're at with Cousins, and why has he struggled so much, you think?
There's still a lot of belief in Cousins. They signed him to a 7-year contract. They traded Casey Mittelstead. They chose Dylan Cousins as one of the pillars of this team. And there's still a whole lot of faith in him. It doesn't shock me, it shouldn't shock anyone, that other general managers are interested in trading for the guy, because there are still a lot of talent there. There's a few factors at play here. Now, 2 years ago, when Dylan Cousins scored over 30 goals, Don Granato basically told this team, go score. We'll worry about defense when the time comes. That's going to be an easy part. You guys go score. You guys go take risks. Go make plays. And he did it. He went. He scored. But last year, Don Granato had to reel them in, because the expectation was, all right, we got to make the playoffs. It's team for this team. It's time for this team to take a step. Well, a lot of guys on this team really struggled to transition from that carefree, loose hockey to playing with more structure. Dylan Cousins is near the top of that list. Some of that is the way he was used. He was put in a ton of very difficult, a lot of D-zone draws, a lot of facing the top guys in the other team. That hurts your confidence. If you're not producing and you're a guy who you come up as a junior hockey player, and even in the NHL, you know, the previous season, you're a scorer. And if you're not scoring, and some of that's matchup based, and his line mates struggle, you know, like Jack Quinn was hurt last year. J.J. Paterka got moved up to the top line. One thing that I think gets overlooked here is Dylan Cousins never had the luxury, I guess I could phrase it, of playing with experienced, productive line mates who can really drag him into the fight in games where you're a young player in this league, right? I think it takes some time for a lot of guys to learn how to play that B game when they're, you know, you're tired, you're not feeling great, you're in your head, there's confidence issues, you're putting pressure on yourself to score. They just kept putting him with Zach Benson and other guys who are just green. And you start to develop some bad habits, those catch up with you, and it snowballs. And that has been the case with Dylan Cousins. We've seen glimpses and snapshots since Lindy Ruff has taken over of Cousins really returning to form. It just hasn't happened with consistency yet. Personally, I think it's usage, it's line mates. He's not producing on the power play. He's somebody who's extremely hard on himself and gets on in his own head. He's his best when he's playing hard. He's hitting. He's involved in the game emotionally. And whether it's the fight with Garnett Hathaway last November that put him out for a stretch last season, or whether it's just, you know, not having consistent line mates and being with a lot of younger guys who are also fighting it, it's really just the problem is compounded. And, you know, I get it. If I were another general manager, guys, and I'm not even just saying this because I cover the Sabres, like, that's a guy I would want on my hockey team. He's somebody I would want to build around. He gets to the net. He plays hard. He's got that leadership. He has all the intangibles that you want. Hasn't worked yet, but we've seen this across the league. Like, you know, LA Kings fans want to give up on Quentin Byfield. You know, there's a lot of players in similar situations where sometimes it's just patience, especially when you have a coaching change and hasn't been exactly a good situation in Buffalo since they missed the playoffs by a point, 23.
Well, our colleague Elliot Friedman connected the Sabres and the Canucks as potential trade partners, and we've heard that, you know, the Sabres in the past, we don't know exactly when, called about Elias Pettersson. And look, they've got the talent to make a big kind of a deal, whether or not it's for a player like Elias Pettersson here in Vancouver or somebody else. But it feels like that's probably Kevin Adams' next move, is to try and make, the Jack Eichel type of acquisition for Vegas, but this time for his own Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, that's been his mission since the summer. He tried to get Marty Natchez from Carolina. He tried to get Nikolaj Ehlers from Winnipeg. No movement clauses are his enemy right now. It's a natural product of missing the playoffs for 13 years and the perceived instability from the outside. You fire a lot of coaches, you fire general managers, guys leave and go on and have success elsewhere. It creates a negative narrative, and it's easier for players to put you on their no move list if you're not winning. You have to earn your way off of those. So you mentioned Pettersson. It makes all the sense in the world that Buffalo would make the call. He's got term on his contract. He's still a young player with an exceptional upside. He doesn't have a no-movement clause yet. That doesn't kick in for him until next season. So when you're Kevin Adams, yeah, you have a lot of trade chips, but really the type of assets that you're able to go out and acquire, the list is a lot lower than it would be if you're almost in any other market just because of the continued losing. And this is a product, some of his doing, but it's also it's a product of the general managers. And, you know, let's be honest here, it's ownership. The instability at the top has led to has made this playoff drought last as long as it has. And you got to pay the price for that. And they haven't earned their way off those lists yet. So Adams, anytime there's a player like that, where Pettersson, his slow start to the season, Natchez in the summer with his contract situation, Ehlers with, okay, what's Winnipeg going to do next? He's making that call. He's always going to make that call as long as he's on the job, because those players, those are the types that he can go out and get. You know, he did it with Bo Byram, right? So it makes sense, but you also have to consider, let's face it, the Vancouver Canucks are trying to win right now. And trading Pettersson for two players on Buffalo, one of whom is struggling in some ways, and the other who has an RFA this summer, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, it's a really fun one to think about. Pettersson's definitely somebody that would match it. The players on both sides are well liked by the opposite side, yeah. Right? But yeah, I think they're a potential trade partner. I don't think those pieces really match up, but we'll see. I mean, Jim Rutherford's bold. Kevin Adams he's scouring the league to find guys like Pettersson where you can go get them and convince them that Buffalo is part of the equation and can be, you know, a destination spot. And his relationship with Dahlin, the history there, you might actually be able to sell that. But yeah, it's very difficult to envision Buffalo being able to meet the asking price.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, too. I'm not sure they quite line up, and the pieces that Vancouver may want may be the pieces that the Sabres wouldn't want to trade at all. And, you know, when I hear Buffalo and Vancouver, the name that I kind of wonder about, and he's playing fewer minutes on the back end for the Sabres this year, and he's missed some games, too, is Matias Samuelsson, the young defenseman they locked up to a long-term contract. And you know as well as anybody, they have lots of lefty defensemen, not a ton of right-hand defensemen. Where is he at with the team, and do you think he's a guy that could potentially be moved if a team made the right type of offer?
It's tough because of the contract, right? I mean, it's long term, the injuries, he's not going to put up points. And to be quite honest, before his most recent injury, he was struggling under Lindy Ruff. He was in a third pair role. Ruff didn't trust him. Now, Samuelsson has been back for three games now. He looked much better. He looks quicker with his decision making. The skating is back to where it needs to be. And to be honest with you, most of the injuries that Samuelsson has had have just been bad luck. He's just a guy who's been snake bit since he's gotten to the league. So I think some very smart general managers and scouts around the league can see through that. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if teams call and try to make Adams an offer he can't refuse. They smell blood in the water. They know, yeah. Buffalo's trying to sell, shake things up, try to improve their roster. And you mentioned it, a lot of left-handed shots, but the skill set is a lot different than what they have in Byram, Power, and Dahlin. Plus, you got Samuelsson signed long-term, and Byram's an RFA this summer. So I think they are going to be very careful in terms of unloading on the back end when quite, you know, frankly, they need to add to their decor. So never say never when it comes to deals like that, especially with, Lindy Ruff isn't using Samuelsson in a top pair role. Could he be open to it? Sure. Who knows who the general, you know, if they lose a few more games in a row, we might have general manager change in Buffalo. And then somebody else is calling the shots and the evaluations completely change. How somebody is viewed in the short and long term completely changes. But it would be very difficult for me to envision a team that's interested in Samuelsson be willing to give Buffalo the value that it would be looking for in a move like that, if that makes sense.
Well, I guess it's a good thing that the Bills are as good as they are, and Josh Allen's probably going to be the NFL MVP. At least it takes a little bit of maybe some of the attention away from the Sabres right now, Lance?
Not at all. Not at all. It's still a great hockey market. Yeah. I know, like, Sabres fans, they'll tell you over and over again, I'm quitting this team. I'm going to stop watching. They never stop watching. Yeah. They don't. They can't take their eyes away, even though it could be torturous at times. No, it's still brutal for them, especially there was so much optimism, right? Yeah, and yeah. With the way that 22-23 went, they finished with 91 points. Everyone thought they had arrived. You know, the coach and general manager thought they arrived. And the rug just completely ripped out from under this fan base. And they feel like they're back in 2021, where they're staring down the barrel of another potential rebuild. Now, I don't think that's the case at all. I think that this is still going to be the core of this roster, no matter who the general manager is. They signed these guys. Pegula signed those checks for a reason. He also believes in them. It's just a matter of what do they need to do to get to that next step? Because they're having a heck of a time elevating and becoming a playoff team. We've talked about Buffalo, Ottawa, and Detroit for about 3 years now.
Yeah.
Which one is it going to be? And they just keep getting in their own way, and there's a lot of dysfunction. Ottawa's looking better recently, but we'll see, guys. I mean, the talent's there. You mentioned it. It's just a matter of, learning how to win. And your top guys need to be bought in to that identity that it's going to take to win night in and night out. And, you know, Darlene's been hurt. That hasn't helped. Thompson's playing through injury. There's a lot of stuff that's gone wrong, but no one's feeling sorry for them. They got to get their way out of this.
Lance, really appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks so much for this.
Hey, always a pleasure, guys. Take care.
There is Lance Lisowski covering the Sabres for the Buffalo News.
I love this text from Vikingstat. You can hear it in Lance's voice. He's got the pathetic franchise fatigue.
Yes, it's tough for the Sabres right now. Losers of 10 in a row, 7 of those in regulation, feeling like another season is slipping away from them. And I think the point that Lance made, and it goes back to the palm trees conversation, quote that went viral on hockey circles from a couple of weeks ago from Kevin Adams, and it's just, did the Sabres make a call on Pettersson? Well, it makes sense because there is no... There's no trade restrictions there, so that's a potential star player you can actually make a deal for, so it would make sense that the Sabres at least made a call.
Yeah, and the thing with the Sabres, and this is what's interesting with what Frank mentioned and what Lance mentioned, you know, Kevin Adams has a very high price for his players, and there is a fear of trading away stars like they have in the past, and I don't think they want to repeat those mistakes. So
he's not trading Cousins away for nothing.
No.
Like, they want to make their version of the Jack Eichel trade.
But that's where I don't see it lining up with Vancouver, where their version of it is, yes, we'll trade Cousins and perhaps Byram, who may have a hard time signing too. And Cousins, hey, we like the player, but you have to pay to get a player like Pettersson, and we're ready to make that risk. For Vancouver, I think the guys that would make sense for Vancouver are the guys that the Sabres don't want to trade. The guys that they would be really fearful of trading, and that is Tage Thompson, Owen Power, you know, and... Forget Dahlin. I just don't think, you know, that's just that's like their Hughes, right? They're not trading Dahlin. But anybody else, I'm sure Vancouver, you know, if the Canucks were interested in doing something, those are the names that will move the needle. But I don't think the Sabres at this stage have any interest in trading Tage Thompson or Owen Power.
Yeah, and that's where I think it kind of falls through. Because, you know, the Canucks, I know some texters are saying, well, you know, Canucks could move Besser and... Well, do the Sabres want a guy who's a pending unrestricted free agent that may not want to re-sign there? Probably not. So, you know, there's obviously that part of the conversation. It's not easy because the Canucks, while they have a quality team, you know, if you're trading for players of the caliber, at least the talent and the potential that some of those Buffalo players have, you know, Buffalo's not looking for more young players. They're looking for an established star if they're going to move some of those guys. And who's the established star? Well, you know, that's where the conversation – that's why it gets pointed back to Elias Pettersson more than anything.
For sure.
Not out of a reality, but it's just you're trying to connect the dots, and that's how the dots get connected.
Yeah, exactly. Now, as far as, you know, because people keep texting in, like, what would you trade him for? What would happen? It's like the type of stuff that I would trade him for is stuff that, you know, probably is not realistic. People keep bringing up, like, what about – Brady Tkachuk. It's like, well, number one, I'm not sure the Sabres, I mean, the Sens want to trade him anyways.
Yeah, pretty clear.
Right? They've come out and
that's
said
that. That's soft tampering, Sat. Relax.
Right.
Reading this text.
Was that a Canucks source telling me this?
Michael Anlauer's coming after us.
Right. But it's like, yeah, I mean, if we're talking about that level of star player, when you're talking about trading your best young players, right, or guys of the caliber of Pedersen, like, that's what I'm looking at. You know, and if you can't do something along those lines, like, to me, it's not even worth considering it, right? And that type of stuff, to me, is maybe it's less fantastical. Maybe it's more fantastical than it should be because the NHL, they're so scared of making those types of trades. But to me, it's more of an off-season thing.
Yeah.
Like, anytime we see a trade of that nature, it's usually in the off-season when there's a big, even the one-for-ones, right? Like Subban for Weber or anything along those lines. It's usually an off-season
there
trade.
There might be one around the deadline. Like, you know, Byram for Mittelstadt last year.
Yeah, but even that wasn't quite the same level, right? Yeah. Like, I think Byron Mittelstadt's a good trade, but I don't think either was considered a superstar.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
Superstars rarely get traded in the National Hockey League, as we've seen. And if they do, it's because they haven't established themselves as a superstar just yet, like a Sam Reinhart, or it's a very unique situation like it was with Jack Eichel and the Sabres not wanting him to have the surgery that he preferred. How'd that work out for him? Not great. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, it's Canucks Central. Just before we move quickly, Sabres Rob, how depressing.
Yeah, poor Sabres fans.
Sabres Rob, we feel for you right now. It's been a tough go. All right, into the pregame show. You'll hear from Rick Tocchet, Quinn Hughes, and JT Miller next. Canucks and Avalanche coming up tonight on Sportsnet 650.